Sometimes it seems like modern life all but requires at least one smartphone and maybe a laptop or a tablet as well. But that can mean that we are on devices a lot. So how can we manage our use of these devices so they don't control us? I'd love to hear if you have figured out a way to take control of your smartphone, your tablet, your computer, rather than throwing it out a window or just giving up and being on it all the time. Tell us what worked for you. Did you go cold turkey? Did you set some boundaries of some kind? And how much trial and error was involved? Do tell. Dr. Joanne Orlando is with us. She's a digital lifestyle and literacy expert. She runs education programs on this, and her latest book is called Life Mode On. Welcome, Jo.
Hi.
Have we lost the battle about whether or not we need smart devices? Can we live without them now?
Well, I think most people want technology in their life. They would struggle to not be with it. And from all my research, you know, that's what they're telling me. But what the problem is, you know, and what's really hitting me hard as a researcher is how much stress people are experiencing from their use of technology, and they're experiencing this stress at work, at home, the in-between times. And that's where the real problem lies. You know, for many of us, we've started using technology as an adult, and we've kind of bought into that idea that technology will make life better. We've bought lots of apps and devices. But what we're finding is we're thinking the way or what how we should use technology rather than really understanding, you know, ways that can benefit us. It's not coming naturally, and a lot of us feel quite out of control in our technology use.
They can be amazing though, can't they? I remember when I was breastfeeding, and so I was up at night a lot, and I was looking at all the amazing things my phone could do. It was my calendar and my email and my photo albums and my clock and my connection to the world. It was an encyclopedia. You know, they can be incredible things. Are we using them for what they can do, or are we doing something more habitual with them?
Yeah, we tend to have fallen into a lot of habits in our uses of technology. And by technology, I mean our phone or our iPad or our laptop. So we are just using it in ways that we often just kind of fall into. So around, you know, 85% of people wake up to and reach for their phone as the first movement of the day. So we didn't really actually decide to do that. A lot of us just started doing that. So there's all these habits that we've formed, and a lot of these habits are now, you know, after a while, they're causing quite a bit of stress for us. And that's kind of what we have to unpack and rethink and change. Because if we keep going along the path that we are now, you know, say in 5 or 10 years' time, we are going to be completely exhausted mentally and physically from our technology use.
Perhaps this is ringing a bell with you if you're listening at home, or perhaps you gave it up completely. Let's hear from Robin in Toowoomba. Robin, welcome to you.
Thanks, Hilary.
What did you do and why?
I dumped emails and any connection with the internet about 4 years after I'd first signed on. And I must admit it was the best thing I ever did. I was able to breathe again, think again, be creative again, and feel as if I actually owned my own life. I didn't need to have all the information on everyone in the world. I can put on the news when I want, and that's enough for me.
That's interesting, Robin. Yeah, the friendship thing is interesting too, because a lot of people say it is a way to connect with friends and relatives who are far away. I can look at Facebook or some other platform and see pictures of the kids growing up.
Well, look, I do have two grown daughters married in England, and I like to have whatever news they can pass on. They pick up the phone. I pick up the phone. I get photos in the mail, or they come over and visit when that's possible. And so, no, I don't have any need for social media. I was never a gossip. I don't like gossip, and that's basically what the internet is, just a whole great big gossip session. And when you realise, I just don't need this. I don't need to see somebody else's photographs of their holidays. Do I? No. If their friend's popping around or and showing me pictures, I can say, yes, I've got the time. We'll sit down. We'll have a look at your photographs. And that'll be enough. But I don't need to see strangers' pictures.
Robin, you are a brave voice in the technological landscape, and I salute you. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks, Hilary. Have a good day.
You too. I'd love to hear your thoughts too. Perhaps you've gone right down that end of the spectrum from like Robin in Toowoomba, not doing the late night online shopping binge, not looking up some random fact that you suddenly wonder about and it itches at your brain. Or perhaps you're at the other end of the camp where you need something almost permanently attached to you, and maybe you have good reasons for that. But I would love to hear if you've made some changes, because with us today is Dr. Joanne Orlando, and she's got some strategies for helping take control of these devices so that you don't feel that they're actually controlling you. Joanne, you write in your book, Life Mode On, that there are a few different needs, I guess, that these devices fulfil. Tell us about the emotional side of things.
Yeah, we often think of our overuse of technology in terms of, oh, I'm addicted to my phone or I'm addicted to the internet, but it's not quite right. It's kind of just a bit of urban myth in a way. We have two reliances on our technology, and one is an emotional reliance and the other one is an intellectual reliance. So the emotional reliance is, you know, we as humans have always tried to make ourselves better than we are. You know, we've got cars that make us move faster, cosmetic surgery make us more beautiful, all that kind of thing. But if you think of just your little phone that you've got in your handbag or in your pocket, all the amazing kind of things it can allow you to do as a human. So we love that idea that if, you know, the car breaks down, we can call, or, you know, if we're bored, we can go on our phone, or if we don't know the answer to that question that everyone's discussing at the dinner party, we can pull out our phone and we'll have the right answer. So we love that kind of emotional support our phone or our technology can give us. So we've gotten quite used to that. So a lot of people, you know, around 50% of people say, oh, I could not actually be without my phone. I don't want to leave it in the other room, because they really like and rely on that emotional support. They're kind of, it's kind of like your best mate, but, you know, in a superhuman way. And then there's the intellectual support. So we tend to use our phone as what's called an external brain. And if you think about it, you know, things like all the phone numbers that we used to remember all the time, you know, they're on our phone, or, you know, a lot of kind of photos, the meeting you have to go to, the person you met yesterday, all that kind of memory things, we often shift over to our devices, which means we don't actually have to leave them in our brain. We're, you know, using a phone as an external brain. And that's good and bad. So the good thing is it kind of frees up our brain. We don't have, you know, don't have a brain full of facts and figures and phone numbers and people's names anymore. So it allows us to do more creative, deep thinking, problem solving, that kind of thing.
I was very heartened to hear from a neuroscientist we had on recently, Lisa Genova, that we shouldn't worry too much about delegating that memory work to devices because it didn't make our brains atrophy. So that was very, very calming to hear.
Yeah, that's right. I fully agree with her. So, but the downside is we can't remember anyone's phone number. Or we don't know people's names, but we've become very good at being able to locate that information. So our brains are kind of shifting and changing in response to us using technology. So pros and cons for both those.
A couple more callers wanting to share their experiences with us, Dr. Joanne Orlando. Isabel's on the line from Northgate in Brisbane. Isabel, hello to you.
Hi, how are you?
Now, are you, what end of the spectrum are you up? You're up the I don't care at all about devices, or I really, really, really care?
No, I probably have a clinical addiction to my phone. But the other angle is that I am a social media professional. So for the last 12 years, I've been a content creator for social media, Facebook, Instagram, everything. I create the graphics, sometimes the copy. So I'm in that sphere.
You're in that sphere. Oh, right. So you're immersed in this whole world. And so does that feel like a duty to you that you really need to be online all the time?
No, it's not a duty, but it's because, you know, all the algorithms in all the social media apps are created to keep you online. It's something I very much enjoy. And I've used my professional work as an excuse, you know, keeping on top of all the social media trends as an excuse to keep scrolling through the social media apps.
And what effect has that had on your life and your family life, Isabel?
Probably nothing that's glaringly obvious apart from the fact that I'm just scrolling on my phone when my kids are sitting next to me. which to them is probably glaringly obvious to them. And I saw a fantastic campaign. I can't remember where it came from, but it was called Phone Down, Parent Up, which was all about the effect that us basically ignoring our kids or prioritising our devices over our kids, what a detrimental effect it was having on the kids. So it's something that I've tried to keep in my mind, and I've slowly kind of deleted apps off my phone, Facebook, deleted Instagram. I've recently become addicted to Reddit because it's quite interesting and intelligent. It's less people sharing about their families and more intelligent content, I guess. But I'm addicted to that, so I've just deleted that yesterday and have basically replaced my scrolling addiction with the ABC News app.
Wow. What do the kids think about that?
Well, there's kind of a finite amount of hot news that comes in every day. So at least I get my little news fix in the morning, and then when I go to pick up my phone, I think, oh, there's nothing on there. I can't scroll Facebook. I can't scroll Reddit. I've read all the top news articles, so maybe I'll go play with my children.
Excellent. I bet your kids are just so excited and grateful about that, Isabel. It's a really interesting perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
I had a terrible moment the other day. One of my kids said, I'll push the other kid while you're on your phone. I was like, oh, no. Well, let's change that situation immediately. Let's go to Chris from Sunshine in Victoria. Chris, hello.
Hello, how's it going?
Good. What's happening for you in the world of devices?
Oh, my daughter's 15. And the other day, this is going back about 6 months ago. Well, she got on social media about a year and a half ago and then decided it wasn't for her. And about 6 months ago, I was bringing up something I'd heard on social media, and she put her hand up and stopped and saying, Dad, that social media talk. I was like, oh, okay.
Wow.
Now she's shortened to SMT. She puts her hand up and goes, SMT. I got it.
Your teenager is schooling you in what not to do.
It's wonderful. She got control of her life. She feels like she chooses where she wants to go and who she wants to hear from. And she doesn't want to hear it, just like, hand up, SMT.
That's really interesting, Chris, because a lot of teenagers say, look, I would feel bereft and left out and like a leper if I didn't have that connectivity, because that's how social events get organised, that's how the kind of groups talk about things. Your daughter doesn't feel that?
Well, she's connected with, well, she texts all her friends, she's got email, and she's got closed groups that she's connected with. So she's got all those things, so it's no problem at all. It's just that the main lot of social media, she doesn't want to be part of that where someone can throw something really negative at her and be, you know, totally left field, and she's going, well, how do I deal with this? She's found a way, which I've really, and she's taught me, which I quite enjoy.
I look forward in 20 years to seeing your daughter be Prime Minister, Chris. That's going to be fantastic. Thank you. And with us today is Dr. Joanne Orlando. She's a digital lifestyle and literacy expert. She's formulated education programs around digital literacy, and her latest book is called Life Mode On. And Joanne, we hear a lot about the negative sides of devices. It's addictive, it's sucking our brains into the social media vortex. Is that the way we should be thinking about it, or can we have the best of both worlds?
Yeah, well, we can have the best of both worlds, but we tend to see those kinds of articles and online posts about how technology is so bad for us. And of course it can be if we're using it in ways that aren't working for us and that are causing us stress. It absolutely can be. But part of the relationship we have with technology is that we tend to put the technology first. You know, we buy the phones, we buy the apps and we use them rather than thinking, okay, well, what do I need? And I'll buy an app for that, or I'll buy, you know, a device for that. So we tend to have like these technology conversations instead of, you know, our life conversations and how technology fits in with our life. But one of the things we need to think about is, all right, how can we actually use technology well? We know all the bad ways. So what are some good ways? And I think a perfect example is when we had the bushfires, you know, a couple of years ago, those massive bushfires throughout Australia, really devastating. And what I saw online on social media, I thought was amazing. We saw people jump on board on Instagram, on Facebook, and all the social media apps. And there was a lot of support within the community, a lot of people who were affected by the fires. They were going on Facebook going, you know, I'm all right, or, oh, no, you know. And people were really reaching out on those apps and really providing a lot of support for each other. And then we had the bigger, you know, fundraising campaign. So it was like the Australian community, or in fact, you know, it was a big International, jumping on board on social media and really providing an amazing supportive community. Now, we wouldn't have been able to do that without social media. So you think, we know all the bad ways to use Facebook, all the social comparison and all the misinformation online and all those kinds of things. But what is it that we can use, you know, social media, for example, in the good ways and building community and keeping, you know, your friendships going and, you know, seeing other people's perspectives. Like in Instagram, we might see, you know, the perspectives of people who have a disability or who are living a different kind of life than we are. And we get that lovely insider perspective on how they're living. So there are definitely good ways of using all these apps, and there are also ways that are quite kind of soul-destroying for us to use these apps too. And that's what we need to think about. Which aspects of our use of technology are causing us stress, and which ones are actually kind of feeding us and making us feel good and, you know, contributing to the world.
But the design features of the apps really work against that, don't they? They've got all these sticky features, these dark patterns and deceptive designs, as you describe them in your book. Tell us about some of the ways they hook us in and keep us there.
Oh, absolutely. And part of having a good relationship with technology is really understanding what's going on online. And these dark patterns are on just about every website that we go to, particularly, you know, shopping sites, travel sites, those kinds of things. And they use, and social media sites, they use a number of tactics to keep us hooked. You think if you use LinkedIn and you get a notification, all you get is one tiny little red dot on your symbol for LinkedIn. But these are called triggers, and they are ways of just keeping us guessing. Oh, someone liked my post, or oh, someone wants to, you know, connect with me on LinkedIn. So the aim of apps is to keep us on as much as possible. So they're not our apps. These apps really belong to the company that owns the apps, and they want us to keep visiting their app because that way they keep their app active.
Yep.
So those little triggers. Yeah, that's right. Those little triggers are a little kind of, yeah, dopamine hits. Someone's liked my Facebook post, but they don't actually tell you what they are. And what happens in terms of your algorithms is that the apps notice the kinds of times and the kinds of days that you go online. So if you go onto Facebook first thing in the morning, then you'll start to get these triggers and things around that time. So it's kind of preparing you, priming you, you know, to go on their app at that time.
Wow. And, you know, Joanne, there are lots and lots of people wanting to share their experiences with you today. I think we might have to go to Nancy from Newcastle because she's got practical solutions. Nancy, welcome to you.
Oh, hello. How you going?
Good. What did you do to get around these sticky apps?
So originally I turned my phone to black and white because, you know, how like when you're scrolling and the colours sort of ignite something in your brain and you want to keep crunching through.
Yes.
And that worked for a time, but then your brain adapts. So it was no good. And then I had my daughter and, you know, sort of really tired and I was on Facebook and I was just scrolling through. I'm like, this is terrible. I got to get rid of this. So I deleted Facebook and I deleted a bunch of apps that were problematic, and I then, instead of being on my phone, picked up a pencil. I hadn't drawn in like 16 years and I was like, oh my gosh, I love this, and now I'm going to art school. Like, it's
really
changed my life. And yeah, I mean, I work in media normally, so I do have a problem with like looking up news and reading that sort of stuff, but the fact that I'm not on social media means I have so much more time, and you get by. Like, you still can have, like, write people messages and stuff, but you don't have to scroll through, and that was the problem, because you're just scrolling and you lose all this time, and then you lose, once you lose time, my God, it's just, you can't get it back.
That's so fantastic that you're picking up a pencil now and you've got all these extra hours, and I've got a sore thumb from scrolling. I think this is a wake-up call for me. Nancy, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Harry from Southern Queensland. Now, Harry once rang and told me about the joy of using robots for cleaning. So I bet he's got some ideas in this sphere as well. Harry, welcome.
Hello, Hilary. How are you going today?
Well, thank you. Now, tech, you're into tech, aren't you, Harry?
We are. So we built a solar passive home, and there's more to technology than just all this social media that everybody's complaining about. I appreciate that that's very endemic in people's minds. But, you know, we use things in the house to control the way the sun comes in. We, you know, use technology to understand our environment, how much rain we've had, and, you know, how much weather we're getting. particularly the sunshine. I'm using things like moving to electricity systems that are based on wholesale and having apps that tell me what the wholesale price of electricity is at any particular point in time so I can maximise or minimise that. So there are a million ways that technology can help you out that are practical and don't come with some of those social media pitfalls that I think many of the people have been ringing in about.
Sounds like the key, Harry, that you're not, you know, on social media all the time swapping stories with people about your solar tech. You're just looking up the intellectual stuff, as Joanne Orlando said. Thank you for that. I still have this image in my mind of the robot cleaners on the windows that Harry told me about last time. Let's go to Beaudesert in Queensland. Brendan, you have gone up one end of the spectrum. Tell us what you did with your devices.
It was a couple of months ago, I think, when Mr. Zuckerberg unfriended Australia. I just took the opportunity to delete Facebook from my mobile devices, and I've just left it on one desktop in the office, and I check it, you know, maybe once a day.
That's interesting, Brendan. Is it such a different experience on the desktop than on the mobile device for you?
It's still basically the same, but it means that I can... You know, I can keep in contact with family and friends and, you know, the gardening group and so forth, but you're not sort of, you don't have that constant urge to check the, you know, check Facebook and check in and, you know, photograph your latest meal. And it's been a godsend. I recommend it to everyone.
I must say, Brendan, that all the people who say that they've deleted some things sound very relaxed.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, lovely. Well, thanks for your call, Brendan. And I said that Brendan was from Beaudesert. I got a bit fancy there, didn't I? Beaudesert in Queensland. I had a little flashback, I think, to high school French classes. I do apologise. You're listening to Life Matters here on Radio National. My name's Hilary Harper. And we're taking your calls with Dr. Joanne Orlando about how you control your devices instead of letting them control you. And Philip's on the line from Wellington in New South Wales. Philip, where are you at on the technology spectrum?
Well, I was explaining to the last person that spoke to me at your station that I don't have internet. I do have an email address, but I never use that because I'm a department, education department employee, and I teach kids language, literacy and numeracy who hate school. They know how to use all these devices, but they don't have any critical literacy or numeracy. So... indeed, I would recommend people read David Gillespie's Teen Brain, and that'll give you a lot more insight to how our brain's been changed in the course of these electronic devices.
Philip, thank you. I do take your point about the difference between writing something or doing a maths problem on a device and that sensory thing you get from a pen or pencil on paper. It's very, very different. Must be a different kind of learning, I guess. Dr. Joanne Orlando, do you have thoughts about that?
Yeah, I do. Each of us use our devices in different ways. So, for example, I'm a writer, and I don't have time to write everything by hand. So I take a lot of photos of notes or good ideas that I've had, that kind of thing, and then I go over those with a few of my own handwritten notes. So we can use technology in ways that really work for us professionally or really work for us personally. And it's about working out, you know, what you need in your life and how you can actually use your device to help you in that way. I personally couldn't work as well professionally if I wasn't taking photos and I didn't have the notes section in my phone. It really helps me. And part of having a good relationship with technology is really identifying where the stress points for you are in terms of your uses and what's working for you and working out more good uses, which I talk about in the book, that we can work towards. It's an important time to just take a step back, particularly since we've had COVID and we've all been on our devices way more than we normally would. Take a step back and really kind of think about your technology use and then make changes towards it.
Well, people in Melbourne are probably doom scrolling a little bit. People in Beaudesert are sounding like they don't really need to, which is lovely. Joanne, tell us about some of the practical steps we can take. We heard a lot of people saying I deleted this or that or I changed the settings. What are some ways we can set boundaries on our devices if we don't want to ditch them completely?
Yeah, well, look, one of the habits that around 90% of people want to ditch is that kind of absent-minded passive scrolling. I call it zombie scrolling. You know, when you just pull out your phone and you just start scrolling, you don't even know you're doing it most of the time. And we do it when we're addressing stress. So you might be bored waiting for the bus, you pull out your phone, or maybe you've had an argument with your partner, pull out your phone, or hard day, you know, time with the kids is stressful. So we tend to be releasing our stress and using our technology as an escape. So the more, and because our mobile devices are always with us, it's really easy to pop on and do that. So we've now got into the habit where the tiniest little lull in the day, we'll pull out a device and go online as a way of managing it. Now, that's the biggest issue with so many people, because they feel out of control. So one of the things to do is to really study yourself, you know, over a day or a couple of days, and look at when you're pulling out your device. You know, be really mindful of when you're pulling out your device and what's causing you to go on there. So what is it? Is it stress? If you had an argument? Is it the people around you? You're bored in your job? What actually is it that's causing you to do that? And then slowly make some physical changes so that it's harder for you to do that. So move those, you know, often scrolled apps off your home screen, log out of them so it's harder for you to do that. And if it's stress that you're kind of dealing with, well, the best way of dealing with stress is to do something productive and creative. There's a lot of documentation around that. So you do things on your device that are productive and creative. Play Scrabble, you know, make a photo album full of good things that have happened to you this year. Connect with people in real ways rather than just liking their, you know, posts. Actually write a comment, because they'll probably write a comment back. And then use social media in different ways to learn, you know, use it in ways that is not kind of sucking your energy out, but it's actually helping you to learn and be productive. You know, this is the first step towards taking more control of your technology, just really being aware of your habits and then making changes towards them.
Yep, getting rid of those little red flags. Dr. Joanne Orlando, thank you so much for your time today on Life Matters.
Thank you.
Joanne's a digital lifestyle and literacy expert. Her latest book is called Life Mode On. I don't know, she says play Scrabble. I think of words with friends. What can I do?